It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In an effort to reduce prison overcrowding, the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee last month voted in favor of the Smarter Sentencing Act, which would reduce sentences for nonviolent drug offenders. The legislation has bipartisan support, but critics say the harsh mandatory minimum sentences that exist provide prosecutors the leverage to seek cooperation from criminals. I'm joined now by phone from Philadelphia by Angus Love of the Pennsylvania Institutional Law Project. Angus Love, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul.
And if you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. You can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Angus Love, would the Smarter Sentencing Act reduce prison overcrowding?
Yes, I believe it would. I think it's an important step in the right direction. It's a bipartisan bill. As you know, Washington is often immersed in gridlock, and this is a rare opportunity to get something positive done.
Now, what about the criticism that I alluded to, the critics who say that the current mandatory minimum sentencing framework provides prosecutors with the leverage they need to seek cooperation from offenders?
That's the mentality that has existed for a little over three decades that has led to the mass incarceration crisis that currently exists. Me being a bit older than a lot of folks, started out in this business in 1980. The Pennsylvania Department of Corrections had eight prisons. Now they have 27. They had 8,000 inmates then. Now they have 52,000. The budget in 1980 for the Department of Corrections was $200 million. The budget proposed by Governor Corbett in his State of the Union address a week or so ago called for an additional $77 million, bringing the total DOC budget up to $2.2 billion, 11 times what it was in 1980. So I think this type of thinking is wrongheaded and really drains valuable resources that could be used for other things.
In your opinion, what constitutes a reasonable sentence? For example, let's say the crime is possession with intent to distribute more than 5 kilograms of cocaine.
I think a reasonable sentence is a sentence that the judge who handles the case hands down. What has happened in the past 30 years during this tremendous increase in prison population has been taking the sentencing discretion out of the hands of judges and giving it to legislators. And legislators, while they're well-meaning, often will play to the crowd and you know, try to outdo one another on being tough on crime. And really, they don't have all the information that a judge would have at the time of sentencing. So to put a straitjacket on the judge and require mandatory sentencing really hampers the overall effort.
Is this all the residual effect of the war on drugs?
It is certainly a part of it. Again, going back to when I began in this business, drug offenders were 1% of the state system. Now they're 37%. When I went to law school, problems such as drug and alcohol were treated as diseases. They were public health concerns, and they've been criminalized. And that has been probably the major factor in increasing the prison population.
And why is that? Why has it gone from being looked at as an illness, as a problem that can be medically related or psychologically related that can be cured, to being something that is criminalized and therefore has to be treated in a much harsher way?
I wish I had the answer to that question. I've tried to study the origins of the drug war. Richard Nixon commissioned a study by a former governor of Pennsylvania, Ray Schaefer, and they came back with some pretty good ideas, but somehow, I mean, I hate to get into partisan politics, but he said all these hippies are smoking pot and protesting against me, and I'm not going to go along with Governor Schaefer's recommendations. I'm going to criminalize marijuana. And then he got the ball rolling, and it just kept going and going.
So in your opinion, has the war on drugs worked? Has it achieved what its creators intended it? You know, Richard, you mentioned Richard Nixon, Raymond Schaefer. is this what they intended to have happen? Did it accomplish what they wanted?
Well, it may have led to the arrest of some of the protesters against President Nixon, but that's about it. It instead led to the mass incarceration and the tremendous shift of resources from education and health care to corrections. People can decide for themselves whether they feel that that's the right way to go, but it really hasn't had any impact on crime or the drug usage. Crime is pretty much the same as it was when they began this mass incarceration, and drug usage is also pretty much the same. My feeling is that, you know, some guy's selling drugs on the corner, and somebody calls the police and says, this guy's selling drugs on the corner. It could very well be a competitor. And so they take the guy off the street corner who's selling drugs, and then guess what? The next day, somebody else is on the corner selling drugs. So I really don't think it has had an impact on drug abuse.
We're talking with Angus Love of the Pennsylvania Institutional Law Project. If you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. What opinions do you have about the war on drugs? What questions do you have about sentencing guidelines? And what ideas do you have about what those sentencing guidelines should be? Angus Love, are there recent developments, are these developments an indication that the war on drugs is in fact coming to an end?
Well, I don't know about an end, but it's certainly changing dramatically. I think the area of marijuana is the one that you're also seeing dramatic changes. On January 1st, Colorado began their complete legalization program. Washington State is going to follow suit in a matter of months. 20 states currently have medical marijuana. So I think that clearly there's been a sea change on the marijuana issue, and that could very well carry over to re-examining the whole war on drugs.
Are we seeing more flexibility when it comes to sentencing? And if so, why?
Yes, we are. I think people have recognized that the tremendous increase in prison populations is not a wise investment. On the right, you have a group called Smart on Crime. Newt Gingrich, Ed Meese, numerous other folks have formed together, and they're claiming it's another failed government program, which certainly there's evidence of that. And then on the left, you have progressive groups concerned that the burden falls too heavily on people of color. In Pennsylvania, they make up two-thirds of the prison population, African-Americans over 50%. And so there has been a growing awareness of a need to re-examine these policies. Overall, for the past 3 years, the national prison population has declined after 30 years of increases. We currently have 25% of the world's prison population in the United States, and I kiddingly suggested maybe we're only down to 24% with the third-year decrease. But there's a long way to go, Pennsylvania has really lagged a little bit behind the national movement on this.
412-246-2002 if you want to join the conversation about sentencing guidelines and how they're changing for drug offenders. What should they be going forward? 412-246-2002. Angus Love, what does all of this mean for changing the laws in Pennsylvania? What's happening in our state?
Well, there have been several well-meaning efforts to change the laws, starting with the State Intermediate Punishment Act several years ago, I think 2005 or 6. California had a successful ballot initiative suggesting that low-level nonviolent drug offenders be treated instead of incarcerated. And Pennsylvania picked up on that, and they passed the State Intermediate Punishment Act with an idea of doing just that. However, the criteria for eligibility for the program were so narrow that it had almost no effect on overall prison population. Then a couple years later, we passed the Risk Recidivism Reduction Incentive Act, which basically was time off for good behavior, again trying to reduce the prison population for those people who stayed out of trouble and completed their sentences with good conduct. However, eligibility criteria was far too narrow. The DA had the right to veto the possibility of RRRI, and again, there was virtually no impact on the population. So last year, a third effort was made. It was called SB 100, Senator Stuart Greenleaf, a Republican from suburban Philadelphia, has been tremendous on these issues and really pushed hard. And he put this bill together, and it was planned to expand the eligibility for the SIP and the RRRI programs, put in a model of a program out of Hawaii called, they call it the Hawaii model, where probationers would not be sent to prison until they had three technical violations instead of one. It also processed inmates more quickly through the system. Short-termers were more efficiently dealt with and released. However, at the last moment, law enforcement community, the DA's Association, insisted on the elimination of pre-release, which allows an inmate to go to a halfway house 1 year prior to their release date in return for their support. And that compromised all the good things in the bill, and the bill has had so far negligible impact. As a matter of fact, I was just looking up the statistics, and for the past year, the bill has been in effect. The population actually went up 328 people. So it hasn't had any impact on the overall population. So there's still more work that needs to be done.
412-246-2002. Let's go to the phones. We have Jack, who is on his car phone. Jack, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, gentlemen, for the conversation. I just wanted to ask the guest, so what is the alternative? I can concede that the war on drugs is not working, but so what do we do to safeguard our families, our communities? I mean, only a lunatic is going to be neutral on the idea of their kids getting involved with drugs. Know what havoc it wreaks in communities and homes and families, and I certainly don't see the legalization of marijuana as being a social good. So what is the alternative?
The alternative is treatment, and the alternative is cheaper than incarceration. And there are inpatient facilities for alcoholics and drug addicts, and there are outpatient facilities depending on the level of involvement. And certainly if we're talking about dealers, that's a different story. If we're talking about people with guns, that's a different story. But for low-level, nonviolent drug offenders, I think treatment is the answer, and it's far cheaper.
Angus, despite the increased flexibility that we are seeing in terms of sentencing, there nevertheless seems to be still a backlog in courtrooms with drug cases. Are you seeing that?
Yes, there is. It's really gotten out of hand, in my opinion, and it's going to take a long effort, such as the bill in Washington you mentioned and others, to really get back to allowing the judges to have the discretion and move these cases forward, and also to stop arresting people for possession of marijuana. I know Pittsburgh has stopped doing that. Philadelphia has not. The district attorney in Pittsburgh has agreed that marijuana possession would now be something less than a misdemeanor. It would be something akin to a traffic violation, a summary offense. The police have taken cognizance of that and are not arresting folks for possession, simple possession. Philadelphia, unfortunately, the DA has said he's not going to prosecute either, similarly to Pittsburgh, but the police have not gotten on board, and they're still arresting people for possession of marijuana, and that's just clogging up the courts, in my opinion, with cases that don't need to be there.
That's amazing to me. If Philadelphia, I mean, isn't there enough crime, another serious...
Yeah, one would think.
Yeah. Now, some critics, to be fair here, say that reduced sentences can still create injustices of their own. For example, offenders who have major involvement have more information to share with authorities, while people with smaller roles don't know anything and therefore have nothing to barter with and could conceivably end up with the same sentence.
There are a lot of inequities in the sentencing, and I see them all the time. And it's unfortunate. I don't know the cure, to be honest with you. A lot of times, if a group of people are arrested for a crime, the first one to cut a deal gets the favorable treatment, and the others pay dearly. And that's not necessarily fair as far as I could see it, but that's the way the prosecutors do business. They need to get information to lead to convictions, and that's one of the many ways that they employ to obtain that. I think it's difficult and does lead to inequities.
412-246-2002, the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation with our guest, Angus Love of the Pennsylvania Institutional Law Project. Let's go to Ken in Pittsburgh. Ken, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Earlier your guest with the question of why are we having so many incarcerations, drug-related incarcerations, said he had no idea. A possibility, I think, might be, would it be a jobs program for people in this state? It puts a lot of people back to work.
You mean by being incarcerated?
No, just having institutions that deal primarily in drug offenders. I know in Pittsburgh, in Woods Run, the former Western Penitentiary, it was closed, I think, in 2004. It was depopulated completely. And in 2007, because of the, I think it's mainly because of the drug sentencing, it was repopulated and reopened, and now it's going full tilt. And I think,
oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it is a jobs program. They often refer to it as a prison industrial complex.
Right.
It is a jobs program, especially upstate. Rural areas are struggling economically, and most of the new prisons have been built in these rural areas. And it is a jobs program, but I'd rather see other types of investments in economic development.
Not such a drain on the taxpayer. I mean, it's very, like you said before, it's very expensive to incarcerate these people. It's not a cheap thing to do, so... and I know the one in Crescent recently closed. There was a lot of local protesting on that. But you know, it's one of the things that has to be done. I think you have to control costs, and boy, it sure is expensive to put these people in jail.
And the Prison Correctional Officers Union is very active politically too, and you can imagine what their stances are.
Ken, thank you for that interesting and important question. A good addition to the discussion here. Let's go to Bob in Allison Park. Bob, welcome. You're on with Angus Love.
Hello, Mr. Guggenheimer. Just a comment, really. I've observed and listened to your guest, and I think the simple comment is people believe, see, and hear what they want to believe, see, and hear. And I've heard you repeatedly state drug offenders and drug offense, and that really does define, excuse me, how we view this whole thing and why we have such a tremendous, 25% of the incarcerated population of the world in the United States. So now you see this as an offense, you see this as offensive behavior. I've spent parts of four decades working in mental health and education in the Pittsburgh area and seen the tremendous waste of human energy and economics involved in prosecuting people. And just stand in the hallways of city-county building back when the courts were busy there, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Also, you might want to note that beside war and militarization, incarceration is the other thing that has absolutely no multiplying or very little multiplying effect in our economy. And
yes,
so,
I agree.
Just something to add to your thoughtful conversation there. Getting hung up on numbers and these policies of incarceration is really seeing the problem. Well, it's a problem because we've created it. That's the whole point. So have a good afternoon, gentlemen.
Thank you.
If I could just add, bringing up mental health, that's probably the second largest growth area in the prison population. About 20% of the people in prison are mentally ill, and I don't know the history of Pittsburgh, maybe Mayview. I don't recall exactly the state hospitals that used to exist in your area, but here in Philadelphia we had Byberry, we had Haverford State, we had Norristown State Hospital, and they had thousands, maybe tens of thousands of residents. And then we decided to close the state hospitals, and for the most part they are closed, but for a few. And these folks were supposed to go into community placement, but there was no funding, and there was inadequate supervision and regulation, and they end up being homeless, steam vents, et cetera. And then they start getting picked up for petty crimes, and soon they're habitual offenders, and then they're off to the state system, and they have a very difficult time adjusting to the regimentation of prison life, and then they end up in solitary confinement, and horrible things happen. And so that's another area that really needs to be addressed. We have to figure out something to do with these folks other than incarcerating them.
Bob, thank you for your call. Let's go to Dale in Pittsburgh. Dale, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Dale.
Hey, I was just calling about this so-called war on drugs. It's actually just a war on the black man. And to address the issue, what they first have to do is start educating folks. Most of these people are being incarcerated or drug users with no education. If they would just simply put in place an educational program, some type of trade, you know, masonry and those type of things, then most of these petty offenders won't become repeat offenders and educate them.
It's a good point, Dale. And Angus, what about what Dale is saying? He's characterizing the war on drugs as an assault on black males.
There's certainly a lot of evidence to suggest that. As I said, Pennsylvania's state population is 50% African American. There was a guy who did a study on drug use amongst various ethnic groups, and he concluded that pretty much every ethnic group uses drugs about the same rate. Yet, when you see the convictions for drugs, you see that it's largely African-Americans are convicted. The area of cocaine is the one that's received the most attention of late. Crack cocaine apparently is some kind of hardened version of the powder cocaine, yet the penalties are 100 times higher for possession of crack cocaine than they are for powder cocaine. And apparently, crack cocaine is popular in the ghettos and the minority communities, and the powder cocaine is more popular in the suburban white communities. And there's really no reason for that disparity. Now, that's one thing that has been addressed in Washington. The bill that you mentioned earlier will be yet another attempt to bring about some equalization between those two crimes. I think it's now down to 17-1 from 100-1, but there's other questions about retroactivity and other issues existing. But there certainly is a racial dimension. We're working on a bill now to require a racial impact statement for all criminal justice legislation. Oregon has passed such a bill, and we're hoping that we're going to introduce one in Pennsylvania, though I don't think it'll pass, but I think it's important to put that out there and let people know that there is a racial dimension to both the drug war and the mass incarceration movement.
Angus, before we wrap up, we have a Twitter comment that says, the war on drugs won't stop any addictions until mental health is addressed. It is shameful that there is no licensing and oversight for providers here. Your thoughts?
I think that's a good segue, that combining both the mental health issue and the drug war together, I think that's a good point.
My guest has been Angus Love of the Pennsylvania Institutional Law Project. He joined us by phone from Philadelphia. Mr. Love, really appreciate your time and your enlightening views on the subject of sentencing for drug offenders.
I thank you, Paul. I think it's important that we have these discussions, and hopefully we can continue them, and I'm certainly available if the need arises.
Sounds good. Thank you again.
Take care, Paul.
Coming up, City Paper film critic Al Hoff previews the upcoming Oscars. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.